If you've ever visited a museum, you know the great resource they are, especially to education. And on today's episode, we're going to chat with someone from the Franklin Institute about the resources they provide and really about how museums in general can help us as educators.
Welcome to the STEM Everyday Podcast. Each episode features educators sharing their practical ideas to put more science, technology, engineering, and math into every classroom every day. For show notes and more information, visit dailystem.com. Here's your host, Chris Woods.
Well, teachers, welcome to this special episode of the STEM Everyday Podcast. Today, we're chatting with Dr. Daryl Williams. He's a Senior Vice President of Science and Education at the Franklin Institute. Yeah, named after Ben Franklin, right there in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. You can find out more about the Franklin Institute online at fi.edu. So excited, and they've got a lot of resources, and I can't wait to hear about just how we as educators can better use those museums and resources available to us in our classrooms. Welcome to the show today, Daryl.
Thank you. It's good to see you, Chris.
Yeah, and first off, again, fi.edu, you could find out great information, but Daryl, you didn't start out at the museum. You started out studying chemical engineering and doing all sorts of amazing stuff on this ride there.
Yeah, I'd have, I guess, what folks call a non-traditional career path, which, yeah, we could spend the whole afternoon talking about that, but we won't for the interest of your guests.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I'm technically trained in chemical engineering, and then I moved to Philadelphia shortly after finishing my PhD to do a postdoc at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia here, which for folks who are history buffs, it's one of the oldest children's hospitals rather in the country. And so, being here in Philadelphia, there's a lot of firsts here. So yeah, so I'm technically trained in engineering, but then I kind of had this aha moment while I was at the bench doing some research, and I was part of an organization that was kind of go around Philadelphia to different schools and work with teachers on creating more exposure for students to realize that anybody can be scientist or engineer. For me, it was an opportunity to think more about how to leverage my own interest and passion for science and engineering, but to think about how to create exposures for young people. So that's really was sort of my first entree into STEM education and thinking about science communication and whatnot. And so here I am some decades later still doing that.
Yeah. And you even worked with the National Science Foundation, and all of this kind of led up to you trying to think about some of those ways that you can create those partnerships with schools, with education, with organizations to get more kids. Like you said, every kid, every classroom, every day should have that opportunity to get excited about STEM.
That's absolutely right. Yeah. So from the start, it was like, how do we think about demonstrating the various careers out there related to science and engineering, and then the folks that are doing some of this work and bringing those hands-on experiences? We did a lot of work with educators to help them prepare and pull off science fairs with their schools. And some of the schools that we work with are really under-resourced schools here in Philadelphia. So they're looking for all kinds of support, resources, materials, and also volunteers to help their students learn about the scientific process, and then also to help them with their communication and things of that nature. So it was a great opportunity to really understand some of the challenges, but also too a lot of the opportunities that really exist
there are
for educators and students.
Yeah. And just if we can start jumping into some of those, because a lot of educators, whether you're in that Philadelphia area or you're worldwide, I mean, there are museums in pretty much everybody's backyard, at least within a couple hours drive of a school, where you can take those kids and it may take a lot of time out. You got to do some field trip paperwork and forms and things like that. But the benefits to have a kid being able to put their eyes on, their hands on those artifacts from history or those artifacts from science and industry can be life-changing for kids.
I agree. Yeah. And I think that's one of the unique things about science centers and museums is, and you hit, I like the words that you just used to describe them, this sort of like hands-on, minds-on kind of thing, where it's really meant to be engaging and interactive. Science is dynamic. It's not a static process. And so we really do our best to try to emulate that in our spaces and through the types of exhibits that we create and that we want our guests and visitors to experience. And I think the other thing too, it's like, it's the idea of coming to the Science Center and having those experiences, which I highly encourage, as Chris has just encouraged, but also too, a lot of science centers and museums are also thinking about ways in which we can come to you.
Yeah.
So some of us have what are called traveling science shows, where we go and we do presentations and demonstrations at your local schools or community-based organizations. We actually used to do that quite a bit until the pandemic, and we have yet to figure out when we're bringing some of those programs back. But so there's lots of different ways in which educators and students can engage with science centers, be it they visit them for field trips, as I highly encourage, as Chris did, but also opportunities for you to reach out to the to your local science center or museum and see if they have programs that they can also bring to you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And again, you know, checking out those websites of those local museums, you know, yours is fi.edu for the Franklin Institute. I know also on your site, you got professional development stuff. You've got resources for educators. You got information about different youth and community programs, which we're going to talk about in a minute, but videos, podcasts, all those kinds of things that, you know, if an educator just bookmarks that and reminds themselves once in a while to go back and look at some of those things, there's a lot of things that can help us to bring more of that STEM into our classrooms.
Yeah, that's one thing that science centers and museums are good at, is creating resources. I'm so excited to be part of this conversation because we love educators. We love working with educators. We see educators as partners, as content experts, as subject matter experts. You understand what works in your classrooms, what engages students and keeps them interested in the subjects that you teach. And so we love partnering with educators. In fact, right now we're working on a really cool project where we're co-creating curricular resources and professional development resources for educators by working with educators from both in school as well as out of school time spaces, and really creating an opportunity for those folks to be in a place where they are really at the table, helping us make decisions about what kinds of resources we should be developing, what actually works best with their students. Because we recognize that if they're involved in the process from ideation all the way to the final product, that utilization of the product is going to have more sustainability than if we were to sort of come up with and assume that we're creating something that may or may not have utility for educators. So we really, really value partnership with educators.
Right. I mean, those educators, they know. I mean, you know, it's a third grade classroom, and our standards are this year, and we're trying to find those ways to connect. We've got some great projects for this, but we need something for that. And with it being connected to, you know, the history, you know, Ben Franklin, there's a lot of those STEM connections to history that, you know, kind of cross those curricular bounds and allow us to get more kids hooked. Maybe if they're a history buff, now we can show them, hey, that science connects to that. Or if they like science, and wow, let's open up that history box, and that becomes a new Pandora for them.
That's right. And I think what's really fascinating about us and our affiliation to Ben Franklin is our organization, which celebrates 200 years this year, was founded by individuals who really honored and respect Ben Franklin, and they wanted to create something that would allow his spirit to continue to live on. Yeah. So we actually house the Benjamin Franklin National Memorial, which is one of the very few national memorials that are in private hands, and that's outside of our nation's capital. So that's a really special feature of the Franklin Institute.
Yeah.
But since our for 200 years, and as you know, we continue into our future, we've really always been about public engagement and public education around science. In our early days, we were a place where individuals would come if they had ideas about invention and things of that nature. And some of our members would review their inventions and give them feedback on how to make improvements on their inventions. And so, as I mentioned, the public education piece, we were one of the sort of early developed of what is known as Central High School here in Philadelphia, one of the prominent high schools in the city. Moore College of Design, which is a women's design college, was also founded by the Franklin Institute. And so education is really at the core of what we do, whether it's being educated here within the walls of the museum or out with community-based organizations. As I said, we love partnering with educators because we see you as subject matter experts and really understanding the opportunities that exist around education in general. And so we value those relationships. And then we also have a couple of programs that we run in-house, which are our programs for middle and high school students. And
if you can talk about those a little bit, Daryl, that'd be great to hear about the PACTS program and the STEM scholars, right?
Yeah, those are those two programs. So PACTS, which stands for Partnerships for Achieving Careers in Technology and Science, is an over 30-year-old program. As I said, we work with middle school students. We have three different verticals or tracks of programming for those students. One is just general science, and then the other areas is in architecture and then in robotics. And so we have volunteers who are folks that are practicing in these respective areas that come in on Saturdays and work with our middle schoolers throughout the academic year and some programming throughout the summer. So that's what we call our PACS program is like our breadth program. And then our STEM Scholars program is our depth program. It's a scaffolded program for first year students all the way to senior year. Students commit to being with us for 4 years once they've applied and have been accepted into the program. And then we do similar programming to the middle school program where we have some general science topics and then some more specific topical areas and workshops that they'll engage in throughout the week. But then as they start getting in further into high school, we do college and career prep and career readiness. So we offer ACT prep for our students, and then we also do help them and their families understand the college admission process, the FAFSA, the financial aid, and the whole piece. And so giving them sort of a very holistic understanding of what it means to apply to college. And so that program is in its 12th year, and the alumni for both of those programs continues to grow, and they're fairly active.
That's awesome. And just thinking through, I mean, I had to help my own kids at home try to figure out the FAFSA, and it can be incredibly complex. And knowing as a high school teacher too, it's difficult to navigate some of those things. So great job that you're able to do that through that STEM Scholars program for those high school kids, for that college prep, and then, you know, that PACS program for middle schoolers. And, you know, you mentioned how it was starting to bring those ideas there. And that's a lot of what STEM has become, getting kids to try something new that maybe they haven't tried before, to try some new process, some new design, some invention. And that very much flows from those ideas that Franklin, really did have. So
I agree. Yeah, I think that's one of the things that it makes STEM so exciting and appealing to kids is that it really taps into all of our innate sense of curiosity and mm-hmm. wanting to understand the world around us. And also this idea of problem solving and finding ways to, invent. I think this idea around invention is a really interesting one. And, you know, Benjamin Franklin is, we call him the nation's first scientist, but he was probably wasn't one of our first inventors. Because there are folks that obviously came before him that were inventing things as well.
Right.
But he was really about invention. He liked this idea of solving problems. And he liked the idea that whatever was created was for everybody. He didn't believe in patents. He didn't like the idea of keeping things from people. He loved ideas and he liked to share ideas. And mm-hmm. so I really think that spirit of his is really also part of the fabric of what we try to do and what we try to create here at the Franklin Institute.
Yeah, that idea of him not, you know, patenting any of his ideas reminds me a little bit of George Washington Carver, same kind of thing. He just wanted to help. Idea. Let's just make ideas that make the world better, not always just to get rich off of them. And
that would be
a great lesson for some of our kids as well. So you're coming up on 200th anniversary of the organization. You've got so many different available ideas, information, resource, and stuff on the website. If you're an educator living in, you know, that Pennsylvania, Philadelphia, you know, greater area, speak to them real quick. You know, what's some of the best ways that you can dive in and start, you know, taking advantage of what you've got there?
Yeah. So like you said, we do have a pretty robust website with a lot of different resources and information there, some curriculum that you can use in your classroom through some of the programs that we have with our partners, National Science Foundation, NASA, and also one of our longstanding partners, GSK, through their Science in the Summer program. So lots of curriculum available online. And other resources there. We also have a longstanding awards program, which is actually has been around, as old as the organization itself, which we'll be celebrating in a couple of weeks. And for that program, we create little video vignettes of all of the different laureates that we've awarded over the last couple of decades. Although we've been awarded, as I said, this is a 200-year-old awards program. So we've awarded over 2,000 medals to laureates, which include the folks like Einstein, Marie Curie, the Wright brothers, and the list goes on, Jane Goodall, and the list goes on and on. So we'll be celebrating our newest cohort of laureates in a couple of weeks. We have 9 great medalists who we'll be honoring. And these videos will be free to view on our website. You can just go to the awards link on the website and have full access to all those videos. I think they're great for classrooms, particularly for high school students, to really sort of understand not only the science and the technology that this particular medalist is being awarded for, but also it provides more of the human side of it too, like what inspired this individual. So we try to do a very sort of holistic encapsulation of the awardee so that you really understand what drives this person. And oftentimes the main thing they focus on is curiosity. They said they were really curious as kids, and their educator, their teachers motivate them to continue to be curious. And so that's really what drives them and the work that they do, and has allowed them to make the contributions they've made.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I can imagine some of those videos might be a great, you know, just kind of intro in a classroom to a topic, or just, you know, a video to show your kids on a particular day. Hey, we got some extra time. Let's take a look at one of these great people throughout, even just right now, to remind kids. It's not, I mean, Einstein was great. The Wright brothers were great. You know, Marie Curie was great, you know, but there's people today doing those great things as well.
Absolutely. So, and you can go down the rabbit hole, because like you said, it could introduce a topic that where it could lead you to all kinds of other different avenues related to something you may be discussing in your classroom, and an opportunity for your students to really kind of, you know, dive in and learn more about all the different facets of science and engineering.
Yeah. And again, be that next award winner.
The next medalist. Someday. Yes. We'd love that.
Someday in the future. That's awesome. So, Daryl, you've got such a great story. Again, Dr. Daryl Williams, Senior Vice President of Science and Education at the Franklin Institute. Again, educators, check out fi.edu, whether you're in the area or not. There's still great stuff on there. And again, check out all those resources from the local museums around you. Don't forget about those as a resource. I love asking people, Daryl, and with your kind of past in engineering and then also in a lot of that National Science Foundation and now at museum, what do you hope is the future of STEM education?
For me, it really gets back to what we've been discussing in this conversation around curiosity. Yeah. And I think too, this idea of lifelong learning, STEM provides an avenue for lifelong learning, because it really connects the dots and shows people how interrelated things actually are. I also think too, it's an opportunity for thinking about learning across settings. And so we tend to silo formal and out of school, but learning can happen anywhere and everywhere. And so STEM offers a great opportunity for that to happen. And so I would love to, for me, I see the future of STEM and just the future of education in general, where there is reciprocity between what happens in school and what happens out of school, where formal educators and classroom educators can intermingle and mix with out of school STEM educators, because I think there's opportunities to learn from each other pedagogically. And there's things that are transferable across those settings. I think we saw that really during the pandemic, where you know, a lot of things, the formal system was challenged, and then had to turn to out of school and to homes and families and caregivers to sort of step up and work with our students to keep things going. And so I think it presents an opportunity for us to be thinking about how to further break down silos so that we can make that lifelong learning a reality.
Yeah. And like you said earlier, Daryl, if you know educators are looking or thinking about those resources, that would be great to have. To be able to reach out and share those with you, and share those with the Franklin Institute or another museum in your area, because you're looking for those ideas. How can you better serve the educators?
Absolutely.
And one question I love asking everybody, and you know, it's kind of funny that a lot of people often answer Benjamin Franklin as his answer. So I'm not going to let you pick Ben Franklin, but who would be that ultimate person from STEM, past or present, that you would love to sit down and have dinner with if you could do that?
So I'm going to go present, and in honor of Women's History Month, which is almost wrapping up, but we still have a couple of days left. So I do want to pay tribute to Women's History Month. So I keep learning more and more about this inventor by the name of Marion Crook. Mm-hmm. She is at Google, and she is the lead of Research Center for Responsible AI and Human-Centered Technology. She's got over 200 patents. And she's actually, one of her patents allows us to do what we're doing now, which is talk over video and do video conferencing and voice messaging. And so I think she was inducted into the National Inventors Hall of Fame in 2022. And she's just, her story is phenomenal. The fact that she has over 200 patents is, blows my mind.
Yeah.
And I just think it'd be fascinating to hear from her, not only as a woman, but as an African-American and somebody who's has a prominent role at Google. You know, love to learn more about her story. And just, she seems like she's such an inspiration for women and for other underrepresented groups in science and engineering. And it'd be fun to have a conversation with her.
Yeah. And I'm looking just real quickly. I mean, instantly you just start searching her and you find, you know, Marion Croak, C-R-O-A-K, and voice over internet protocol, VOIP technology, and different patents and things on the National Inventors Hall of Fame website. And just so much that, that vice president of engineering at Google. And again, those stories, those people, those are some of those people that you've been awarding and some of those people that from today that kids need to learn about so that they can say, hey, I'm going to do something amazing too. So,
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Daryl, it's been great chatting with you today. Any other last thoughts for the educators out there?
No, I think Chris hit the nail on the head. Make sure you develop relationships with your local science centers and museums. And if you're close to Philadelphia, we would love to see you here. We've got some amazing stuff that we're going to be unveiling throughout the next couple of years. We're reimagining all of our exhibits. We just opened a new space science exhibit last October.
All right.
And so there's a lot of really great stuff that we're working on. And again, we love partnering with educators. So happy for you to reach out if you'd like, love to talk more about some of that work.
That's right. Thank you very much today. Really appreciate having you on the show today, Dr. Daryl Williams.
Thank you, Chris.
And again, head to fi.edu to find out way more about all the resources and information that the Franklin Institute offers. If you need to connect with me, head to dailystem.com. I'm always happy to help as well. And again, in the meantime, educators, just keep on doing that most important job. Each and every day, we are finding those ways to, like Daryl said today, unlock that curiosity and help those kids to do amazing things in our world.